I'm sitting in Corrales in a really beautiful spot and talking to Nell Painter, who's here in New Mexico because of her books. You've been doing a lot of work.
It feels like work when I finally come down, but while I'm doing it, the adrenaline flows and the people are so wonderful to talk to. I really love getting back from the audiences. Sometimes if an audience feels right, I'll talk to them about the parallels between the bad words like black transferred into a neutral word and old, which is still a bad word. And if they're really good, I get them to say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud, which they love doing. All these white people saying it loud, they're black and they're proud. And then what's a little harder, say it loud, I'm old and I'm proud. And they do that and they feel liberated.
Really?
Yeah, they just start glowing about, oh, wow, that's kind of a weight that's fallen off, at least for the time being.
Huh. I just posted on my Facebook, I had just gone to a Joan Baez concert. She was doing her farewell tour in Santa Fe, and I was in the balcony. So I looked out on this sea of white hair and said, all the white hair in New Mexico must be here tonight, and everyone just loved it.
Yeah. We don't get many chances to celebrate being old.
Yeah.
But one of the things I discovered as I've been talking to people, reminding me that old is not after 65 or after 70. If you're in art school, it's after 28. Yeah. When I was at the Rhode Island School of Design, we were a group of 8 painters, and 2 of them were 31, 32, and they felt so old. And then just being a woman in our society, you start feeling old. You start feeling like you're being disappeared as you look at 40. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people recognize old.
When you were going to RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design, you were doing something that you'd sort of put off doing and you'd wanted to do.
No.
No?
Going to graduate school was something that came up as I was thinking about going to art school and as I was in BFA study. This is not something I had been hungering to do for decades.
But you had wanted to be an artist before. Oh,
okay. I got it wrong. Oh, dear.
Yeah, the visual started creeping up on me. Okay, that was a while ago when I was working on my biography of Sojourner Truth.
Okay.
But to turn that into my own self going to art school, that came many years later. So the visual came into my work and my way of thinking about history decades before it gelled into, oh, let's not be an academic historian anymore. Let's go to art school.
So I was interested in the fact that you wanted to be an artist, and you sort of wrestled with being an artist, being that persona, that you chose school as a way to get there.
Yes, I did. And that has to do with my background, which is 120% academic. My father was chief technician of chemistry at the University of California, Berkeley. So I grew up on the Berkeley campus. And I went to Berkeley, which is the only place I wanted to go to college. So as long as I can remember, I can see myself lugging armloads of books back from libraries. So that step was very easy. I did spend a moment thinking, well, I don't have to do a degree program. I can just take classes. Mm-hmm. But that was too scattered, too amateurish for me. So at first I wanted to be the kind of artist I was, historian, but it turns out I don't have time for that. And it took years to realize that that's okay.
You talk about sort of dealing with the other people's reaction to you when you were in school, and part of it was age and part of it, well, why don't you tell about that?
Most of it was age.
Okay.
At Rutgers, there were other people of color and lots of other women. Even older women. Rutgers is a big state university in a wonderfully diverse state, much less so at RISD. Almost no African Americans. very heavily Korean and Korean American, rich Koreans.
Oh.
So, you know, they were not, yeah, they were not interested in the politics of American society and history. And that really gave the place a kind of a flavor that seemed to say that you could do art for art's sake and not get tangled up in American history and culture.
Did you feel as though you had as authentic an artist persona as anyone else? And why wouldn't they recognize you?
No. The short answer is no. And again, the big reason for that was age. That the art world, as I was being trained to enter in graduate school, is obsessed with youth.
Hmm.
And so my colleagues who were 32 felt it as well. But I felt totally disappeared. They could not, I was the old black lady. I was nobody. And that came as a shock to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I went around wanting people to recognize me as somebody. But when recognition was withdrawn, I really felt it.
Yeah.
Did they know what they were doing?
I don't know. You'll have to ask them.
Oh, never.
You'll have to ask them.
Well, tell me about how it affected what you actually do, how it affected your art. Or maybe it didn't. Maybe your art just supersedes.
No. When I was in graduate school, I was a pathetic, insecure mess. It was so humiliating. And I was humiliated. I was just awful. It's hard to admit how insecure and pathetic I was, but I was. And it took me a couple of years after graduating to put myself back together.
Wow.
And to discover my way of making art, which is just my way, because I can't set aside my involvement with history, my thinking like a historian, mm-hmm. and my wanting the visual to make visual sense, but in addition, to make some discursive sense too. So it took me a couple of years to discover making books and discover putting together history and art, or text and image.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that now, and it's only been the last couple of years that I've felt comfortable with that, and I'm still feeling my way. I don't think I will ever get to the point of saying, oh yeah, this is how I work, that's that.
Let's tell our listeners your age when you were experiencing that, because you weren't a young person who would maybe have that kind of feelings.
Mm-hmm. I was an old person. I started undergraduate school at Rutgers when I was 64. I think that's right. So I was already a certified senior citizen. And people were fascinated when they focused on me by my age. People kept asking me my age, and they still do. And if they ask when I was born, I say I was born in 1942, which is like the Dark Ages. Yeah, before the birth of Christ or something, yeah. Because when you're an artist, it's your name, and it's when you were born and where you were born. So that's part of what an artist's identity. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah. So an old artist was born in the 60s.
Do you wish that you had gone, just started being an artist rather than going to school about it?
You mean just make art, follow my muse?
Yep.
I couldn't do that. Okay. You know, maybe it's my academic background, but I did go to a studio school for a drawing and painting marathon, which was purely drawing and painting. So I stood up from 9 until 6, and I drew and I painted, and I loved it. But I wanted more. I wanted more intellectual heft.
Oh, okay.
So I decided that I needed to pursue a degree, but also pursue a degree in a place that had art history and art criticism and all the other infrastructure around art.
So now In your book, you're telling what your experience is, and you're sharing that as you go around with audiences. What do you want them to get out of it? Do you want things to change, or do you want them just to know what happened?
I want them to buy my book. But one of the things about art that I liked was that it's not my responsibility what the viewer gets.
Yeah.
So whatever the viewers want, I hope they find it in my book. But that depends on the person. It depends on the reader. So some readers are, like last night in Santa Fe, a woman thanked me, maybe she was in her 50s, for saying that you can do something else after you're old. And for me, that was pretty obvious to start with. But if that's what she took from it, I am so pleased. So there are lots of ways into my book, Old in Art School, from what it means to be visual as opposed to be mental, the contrast between the visual and the text, the contrast between an old student and a younger student, some thoughts about what it means to be a Black artist in an American society. All of that is in there, and it depends on what the reader wants. I do end with advice, though. My one piece of advice for everybody, especially women, especially Black women, especially Black people, especially people of color, is do not see yourself through other people's eyes.
And I guess as another old person, I can sort of sympathize with that. I like that. I sort of had the feeling that you wanted the people that had been responsible for your experience, the professor that you talk about, that you wanted them to read the book and to know what happened to you. But it sounds like you don't really care.
That's right. That's right. The book is not for them. If one of my teachers read it, someone I speak well of, Judy, the drawing teacher, and she's a Facebook friend, and she said she read it and she liked it good. The others have not responded, but, you know, it's not for them.
Yeah, right. Okay. As you go and you present to people, are you finding other artists who come and have an experience with you, or is it mostly old people who aren't?
Yeah, it's a lot of old people, but old can go down into the 40s. People, women especially, who want to do something different. And sometimes their ideas about what it means to be an artist are wildly romantic. One woman in Texas who had not gone to art school and had not taken art classes, she said, I want to be an artist. And I said, well, what do you want to do? What kind of art, you know, what's the point of it for you? She said, I want a piece in the Met. And I said, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
She said, why not? I said, you don't have enough time. For a woman artist to be in the Met, she will have been making art for 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Besides the fact that you have to be good, I would assume.
Well, what is good? Yeah. What is good art?
Yeah.
We don't know.
You have to produce something that people like, maybe.
You have to produce something that the curators at the Met like. And you also have to do it consistently. You can't do a one-off and get that into the Met. You have to have a serious body of work. And this woman, whether she was in her 40s or her 50s, I don't know, and starting her practice, even if she started the next day, she didn't have 40 years of making her art consistently.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the time when you were sort of crushed by the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And what got you out of that? What happened?
What got me out of being a pathetic little nub was one of the gifts of age.
Oh.
And that is that I know a lot of people. And some of those people were experienced in art, art historians, people who knew what the world was, who had experience with crits, who had curated shows, and they could look at my work and they could look at it and engage with it, which was what I was missing in art school.
Mm-hmm.
engagement.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that awful?
It was awful. Yeah. But I'm so glad that I had alternatives. And I call them my alternative crits.
Let's talk about the contrast with your life before you retired and decided to have this experience with art.
Before I retired, I was the Edwards Professor of American History at Princeton. Now I'm the Edwards Professor of American History Emerita at Princeton. And I just talked to NPR's Weekend Edition about the 14th Amendment. Mm-hmm. So there still is a historian in me, and I still respond to historical issues. However, one big difference in my approach to history as I deal with it, as I think about it, and as it enters my art, is that I can go deep into tiny little places in history, and I can ask questions even where I know there's no answer, that I could not possibly find the answer. I can make art out of the question without an answer, or even if the answer is tiny or idiosyncratic. So for a historian, the question is, the person, the people, the events, the places, are they representative of some larger entity? Does it make larger sense? Is it representative? But in art, for me, that is not a question. The question is, does this image, does this person, does this commission interest me? That's it.
That's interesting, because I was thinking that the difference would be that when you were teaching, I was a former teacher also, and that you feel responsible for your students, that you feel a responsibility for what they get out of it. It's not just what you're discovering and what you're writing. Mm-hmm. It's what their experience is. And that in creating art, you wouldn't have to worry about that.
That's correct. So my great strength as a historian was that I could take masses of information, some of it contradictory, some of it very detailed, and the detail needing to be there to make sense. So I could take this roiling mass of strings and people and places, and I could explain clearly without losing the nuance. Mm-hmm. This is hard to do.
Yeah.
So that was my gift as a historian. As a visual artist, I don't have to do that. And what you see in my art may not be what I see in my art, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. It may not even be what you meant to say or what you think you're saying.
Yeah, it's not so much. This summer I made a piece, and I gave a print of it to Mary Ellen and Sue, and it's called Swampy Land by the River Don. And this is a river. I was inspired by a 17th century map that was in my archive of images from Odalisque Atlas, which is a series of images that I was making in 2012. And I was an artist and scholar in residence at Yale, and I had access to the Beinecke, which is heaven. So I found this map and a whole bunch of other images in the rare books. So this summer, after my book tour, and I was really tired, and I didn't have a whole lot of time, I just wanted to make something. So I found this little map, and I made lino prints from it, so tiny lino prints, and hand-colored them. It's tremendously satisfying. So it has a little historical meaning, because the River Don was the commercial artery between Ukraine and Russia, and it emptied into the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea. So it was the beginning of the Black Sea slave trade. That's why it was in my archive, my image archive. So it relates to the book, The History of White People, and to my art project, the Odalisque Atlas. But I turned to it because I liked how it looked.
I wonder what it's like to go from being a respected person, a respected scholar, and being looked up to and trusted, and then you kind of threw that away and started over again. Or maybe I'm romanticizing it.
You're romanticizing it. Yeah. I didn't mean to throw away a certain standing in the world. I didn't realize until I lost that standing that it was important to me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Yeah. So to go from who I thought I was myself to being the little old black lady of no importance, that was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
You know, people kept asking me that. My first thought was, I have written 8 books. I am done. I'm going to just rest. But people kept asking me, and I started talking back. My publisher wanted me to do a small book on grief because he liked how I wrote about grief with my parents. That didn't really get me. And then I was fascinated by the figure of Emmett Till coming in and out of our Emmett Till, who was murdered in 1955, coming in and out of our national discourse, including a painting at the Whitney Biennial in 2017, which became a big brouhaha. So I was really interested in that, and that will be an artist's book.
Oh.
I will draw and I will write. But before that, back by national demand, is an artist book called The History of White People for Dummies, illustrated by the author.
Oh.
And so it'll be The History of White People for Dummies, but also with a new introduction that is The History of White People, including the age of Trump. The point of the book, The History of White People, is that the notions change. The definitions of what is whiteness, what is white race, they change over time and place. And we see in the last 2 years how the notion has changed in our present time. I published The History of White People in 2010. And then I could say that for most white Americans, racial identification is meaningless. They don't have race. They're individuals. Mm-hmm. And the people who have white race are over there in some little corner. They're Nazis, they're Klansmen, and they don't count. They have nothing to do with normalness. Mm-hmm. Normalness being as an individual. That is no longer the case.
When can we expect that?
I'm aiming for maybe the end of 2020 or 21.
With all that's happening now, you must feel really called upon to make comments.
That's right.
Okay, I've been talking to Nell Painter and
Old in Art School, A Memoir of Starting Over.